Today is the 22nd of September 2022. My name is Patsy Vizentz and I'm interviewing Carmel O'Halloran at her home in Forestfield in Western Australia. The recording is being done on behalf of the West Australian branch of the Australian Garden History Society and is part of the National Collection of Oral Histories. So thank you, Carmel. I'm grateful for your patience in doing this. So before we start, you know, going into questions and things, could you identify yourself with your name, your birth date and place of birth, please?
Carmel Mary O'Halloran. I came into the world on probably a cold, wet day on the 22nd of June 1944 at the Malahide Private Hospital in Narrows in WA. According to my birth certificate, Nurse Barrington was in attendance. I was the second child and daughter of Mary Higgins and John O'Halloran. My birth certificate states that he was 30 years of age, born at Cherry Tree via Katanning, and was in the AIF. The reason I was born at Narrogin is that my mother was staying with her sister and her husband on a farm at Allenbrae, Quindanning. The farm was about 40 miles away from the closest hospital maternity services. Dad was away serving in the AIF during World War II.
So, born in Narrogin, and your father was in the AIF, but what did he do before the war came?
He was a bank officer for the Bank of New South Wales. And after he came back from the war, he continued working with the Bank of New South Wales until his retirement when he in his 60s. He never really liked his job in the Bank of New South Wales, because he was born at Cogenup, and so he'd always lived an outdoor life as a young person, but he really hated farming and he didn't want to become a farmer. And he also had four other brothers that were there that could take over the farm, but he hated the bank, couldn't get away from it. But he really didn't have much love of gardening. Tony did it when he had to, and he used to mow the lawn, but he used to get terrible hay fever. But he didn't seem to take any dedication for it. But you would hear him mowing the lawn and he'd be swearing and cursing all the time. So I didn't get my love of gardening from him. I believe my mother loved gardening, but she died suddenly when I was 8 and a half after she had my younger sister. But I believe she was a gardener. And she was only 42 at the time. So Dad had the responsibility of bringing us all up. There were six of us, three boys and three girls, and I think I've said already that I was the second eldest. And my love of gardening came from my aunt, who I lived with as a baby for probably a couple of years while Dad was away. And she was a really keen gardener. And I've learnt the names of a lot of plants, which I remember now, things like the Philadelphias and Irish strawberry tree, stock plants, kikuyu grass. And Auntie, every year, or probably twice a year, used to get sheep manure from down at the shearing shed and spread it over the garden, and everything always looked so healthy.
Was she on a farm?
Yeah, she was a farm at Quindanning.
Quindanning.
Quindanning is between Boddington and Williams.
Very cold and in winter.
Cold, but beautiful country. It was really hilly, very, very hilly country, magnificent country.
Is that sheep growing?
Sheep, oats, wheat,
so
all of those.
So crops?
They had a lot of sheep. Wheat and oats, they used to grow there. I'm not sure what they grow, but that farmer's still in their family.
So she had, and she had a garden. She had a love of gardening. Was that around the homestead?
Yeah, right around the perimeter of the house, and there was a fence dug into the ground to stop the rabbits, because the rabbits were in plague proportions then. But that's before myxomatosis was introduced to get rid of them in the 50s. So there were hundreds and hundreds of rabbits. So it was well rabbit proof. And also kangaroo proof, I suppose, too.
Mm.
The other person who greatly influenced my gardening was my father's sister, Auntie Margaret, who lived in Uppercross. And she had a house and garden that overlooked the Swan River. So standing on their back veranda, you could see right the whole way across to Perth. So she also taught me lots of names of plants that she had in her garden. And every time I went to visit, we always spend time wandering around the garden to see what was coming out, what was the next thing that was coming. So she was a great influence. And I think my granny, Dad's mother, who was on the farm at Cherry Tree in Coconut, she obviously had a love of gardens, because at one stage you had about 100 roses growing on the rocky hillside. And reading back into the family history, their first house was down at the river. And Grandpa had, I think at one stage they had a couple of hundred fruit trees. So they were both obviously meant into gardening. Granny died when I was about 11, so I don't remember her doing much gardening. But after they retired and came to Perth and lived in West Perth, I remember seeing Grandpa had grown sweet peas along the wooden picket fence. It all, and they were, a good couple of metres tall. So obviously he had a bit of a love of gardening, but not very much.
So do you want to, you've mentioned Cherry Tree twice. So do you just want to explain what Cherry Tree is? What you mean when you say that?
Cherry Tree was the original farm that Grandpa Halloran bought. His brother actually put a payment on it, and there's still a family on the farm at Cherry Tree in Coconut. So
how big is it?
I'm not sure, but it'd be a few thousand acres.
Okay, so quite considerable.
Few thousand acres. So that's where Granny and Grandpa Holland had their farm at Cherry Tree. And in the conference, the Garden History Conference, which was in 2014, one of the days of the conference, we actually visited Cherry Tree.
Mm.
So everybody saw all the beautiful garden. After Granny and Grandpa Halloran died, the farm passed to my Uncle Dennis, and then it passed on to Robert. And his wife, Jane, had, I don't know how many roses she had in that garden, but it's still a magnificent garden today.
So can I just interrupt? When Robert and Jane, where they had their farm, is that Cherry Tree?
That is Cherry Tree.
Oh.
That is Cherry Tree.
And the garden is part of the original.
Yes, yeah.
But you said that the house was originally down by the river, and then it... So this the house that exists now is a second or third?
Oh, it's probably the fourth house.
Fourth house.
So they lived down at the river for quite a few years and raised their six children down there. Then they moved up to the hill above where the Cherry Tree house is now. But Jane in the garden has got the copper from the old wash house and has got that in her garden filled with plants. But Jane and Robert have now retired, and they live in Albany, and their son Nicholas has taken over that farm.
So it's still an O'Halloran?
Yeah. Since about 1904.
Gee whiz.
So it's over 100 years old.
Yes.
It's been in the family.
Very good.
I think Grandpa's brother Grandpa was from South Australia, and his brother had been in Western Australia kangaroo shooting at Kojonup, and he saw the land and he bought the land, and then Grandpa paid for that. So Grandpa had, at that stage, he was actually serving in the Boer War. So he went to the Boer War from South Australia. So his family were all in South Australia. And my great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, apparently he was growing vines, grapevines, in South Australia. And that would have been in the 1820s, I suppose, 1830s.
After the, I think Adelaide was settled in 1835. That's Melbourne, so it's after Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. He was in South Australia and growing grapevines. So there seems to be a bit of a history of gardening.
Of horticulture.
Going back through the family.
So it is interesting, isn't it, that it kind of skipped, although... accepting that your father, you know, didn't like farming, but didn't quite like banking either. Yeah. So was he based, was your father based in Narrogin, or where was he based?
No, Kojonup is quite close to Katanning, so his first job was in Katanning. And I know at some stage he was at Northampton. And the other side of my family, actually, some of those lived in Northampton. But I believe he met my mother in Busselton. She was a nurse. And she was... He worked in the bank in Busselton for a while. So he met my mother in Busselton.
Gosh.
Apparently she was engaged with someone else at the time. But as soon as she saw Dad, that was it. He was a very quiet sort of person. Actually, he had a great sense of humour. Very quiet anyhow, so that was it.
That's lovely. So give me some idea of where you went to school. There were six of you, and because of your mother's passing, then were you separated?
We only were separated with Mary, because Mary was a baby that was born January 1953, and she was actually raised by my Uncle and Auntie Kit and Uncle Gus, the ones who I was at their farm after I was born, and Mary ended up being raised by them. And the rest of the boys, who were only two, Alec was two and I think Mick was about four, they stayed on the farm until they were old enough to go to school. And then we lived in South Perth. And we used to go to the farm for all of our holidays, or otherwise go to a cousin's farm, Coral, or sometimes we'd stay at Faye's farm. So we were always sort of farmed out on the school holidays. But I had a fabulous association with all of Auntie Kit and Uncle Gus's family.
So she was the influence on you as far as gardening.
Yeah.
Yes, you didn't mention her name.
Oh, yeah, so yeah. Auntie Kit, she was the one who was a great influence on my gardening. So every holidays we'd be down at the farm or someone else's farm.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Dad had to still keep on working, and I don't think there was any payments for single fathers at that stage. Mm-hmm. But the bank were very, 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 very good to him. They used to give him time off when he needed it. So I went to school in South Perth. And the boys went to Manning at Aquinas, and Maureen had a few years up at St Gertrude's in the North Hill, which she hated because she always said there were maggots in the meat. Don't know whether that was a true story or not, but anyhow, that was in the North Hill. It was probably quite a bit different then, because that's where they had the boys and girls orphanages there, as were Aboriginal orphanages there.
Yeah.
And some nasty things have been said about them since. So that was in the late 1950s. After school, Dad couldn't afford to keep me at school because he had three boys to educate, so I could only do my junior and I had to leave school and start working. which was at the RAC, that's where I started off, and then Sydney Atkinson's, and then I got married, and I had to leave the RAC when I got married, because that was a rule then, in 1966, you couldn't stay there after you were married.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable when you think of it now.
Yeah.
And I got married for a few years, and went to work, did office work again, and then I kept on getting shoulder aches, so I decided, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I went and applied for a job at a nursery, just walked in and said I want a job. And that was at Highway Nurseries in Maddington, so I walked out with a job, even though I'd never worked in a nursery before. For the first 3 months I was there, the owner was a Shirley McCran, and she was a very hard taskmaster. And I actually served an apprenticeship. Now, there was no such thing at that time for girls, but my first 3 months of my job was working. I started in July, and the first 3 months I worked in the rain all day, every day, with my long plastic trousers and coat on. Loved it, absolutely loved it, and never got sick. And she sort of was training, both two of us started on the same day, so every day we had to go out and learn three new plant names, starting at the front of the nursery and working down, and every day we'd be tested on the names of the plants we'd learned that day. And she had them in alphabetical order, starting at the front of the nursery, so A at the front, and it was a long, narrow nursery, so every day we'd learn some new plant names.
So where did she get her training, do you know?
I'm not really sure where she got her training, but she also had a florist shop in Victoria Park, Russell's Florist. She was the owner of that, and her mother used to run that. Mother ran the florist shop. And Miss McCran, we always had to call her Miss McCran, used to sometimes go up to a fantastic garden up in the Armadale Hills to cut her flowers for the florist shop a couple of nights a week. She also had a brother who was a Catholic priest, and she always shut the nursery on Monday so he could come and do all the odd jobs for her.
What, she clearly didn't mind that you were married at that stage.
Well, she used to get my ex-husband to go and do the odd jobs on the Monday too. So she was quite happy to have another man around to do the jobs for her.
So the rules could change, but government jobs were definitely that you certainly had to leave when you were married, or more institutional jobs would have meant that. So this is a smaller private concern. It probably would...
I think the rules had changed for married women by then. And they changed a couple of years after I left the ROC, because a friend of mine was getting married, and she was secretary to the manager of the insurance company, ROC Insurance, and he didn't want her to leave, so he got the rules changed for the ROC.
So you know. So in the nursery, you learnt plant names, and you must have learnt things like conditions of growing, and so that was really a formal, as you say, like an apprenticeship.
It was formal training, but I didn't ever get any credit for it.
Did you do any academic studies at all?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. It's interesting thinking back there, then talk about occupation health and safety. It was a very small room at the front of the nursery, and inside that little room was where, well, she didn't have a cash register. I don't know if she even had a till. That's where all the storage, all the fertilisers and pesticides were all stored together. And to have our lunch, we sat on bags of fertiliser in that room. There was nowhere else. That was our lunch room.
But there was also poisons and...
Oh, everything. Yeah, the fertilisers were on the floor mostly, and the bottles of Betastistox and things like that were sitting above our head when we were having our lunch. And the other thing, even though she had two toilets, she could only use one of them because the other one's where she stored her boxes. She was a bit eccentric, I must admit. The other thing that I used to do, I didn't get my licence till just before that I got my licence.
Your driver's licence?
Driver's licence. So I was over 21. And a girl called Dulcie used to drive the ute to the railway station with the fruit trees to send down south. And also she used to take the rubbish to the dump in Maddington, which was like a big muddy hole. So when she left, I had to do the driving. I had to take the fruit trees to the railway station and also take the rubbish to the tip. And it was all one of those tips you just backed up and put the rubbish out. I know, I was absolutely petrified I was actually going to fall in the tip. But then it was time to leave because we hadn't had any children, so we'd applied for adoption. Anyhow, we got the news to say we were getting a baby, so I had to leave there because we were getting the baby. So that was my life at Highway Nurseries. After a few years, I decided it was time I went back to work. And I went to Waldex in Bentley, worked there for a couple of years, and somewhere in between all those times I had another couple of children. And then I decided I wanted to go back to work, so I was a census collector for a couple of years, did that. Then I applied the job at Lushgrove in Cannington, but I didn't tell them I had any children or what my marriage status was, because a friend of mine had applied for a couple of positions and she hadn't got any. But she had six children, and she said the number of children, of course, she never ever got a job. So I applied for this position, didn't say how many children I had.
And how many did you have?
Four. I said, I'm not going to tell them that. Anyhow, I got the job. I think I wrote a letter to five nurseries, and I ended up getting the reply from Lushgrove and Cannington, and I started there. After I'd been there for a while, one of the apprentices was doing starting at Bentley TAFE, doing her certificate. So I thought, oh, I could do that. So I started doing part-time study at Bentley TAFE for my horticulture certificate. Carried on with that. I was there for another couple of years. Then I worked at the Dutch Windmill in Jandakot. And the Dutch Windmill would be remembered for all its Dutch Delft pottery, the blue and white pottery, which we had to spend hours cleaning every week. And also zygo cactus, she had a lot of zygo cactus and a lot of epithelium. And the zygo cactus and epithelium, she used to do hundreds of mail orders every week, send them all over the place. While I was there, I had started doing my diploma in horticulture part-time. So I went on and finished that after a few years. Then one day I got a call from TAFE, from one of the lecturers, saying, Carmel, we'd like you to come and teach for us. And I said, oh, I can't teach. I couldn't do that. She said, well, just think about it. She said, because you've got very good plant knowledge. And she said, that's what we need. So eventually I decided, oh yes, that would be good, so I decided to do that.
So plant knowledge is recognition of leaf, flower, you know, being able to recognise the plant,
yes.
And then the other is naming it,
yes.
Using the Latin form.
The naming was very important, but also because I'd had all the other experience in the nursery as well, and also had my own garden, because I established a garden in Gosnells. Then I established a garden up in Les Mertes, so I had actually experience on planting and all those sort of things that go with it.
Can you recall what years this was happening?
Waldex would have been mid-70s, Highway Nurseries was about probably 1969, I guess.
But what about doing your TAFE teaching?
My TAFE teaching, I did have written down somewhere, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember it.
So it may be in the 80s?
No, it wasn't 80s. It was it'd be the 90s. 90s, yeah. The 90s. And after I'd done my diploma, I actually did part-time study at Edith Cowan University, but never ever finished it. But the one interesting thing about my plant knowledge show how naive I was. After we were first married, we lived in my granny and grandpa's house in West Perth because that had been passed on to my dad and my auntie Margaret, and they weren't sure what they wanted to do with it. So we lived there for 12 months after we were married. And I was just to do a bit of gardening at home before I was married, but I decided I wanted to grow some vegetables, and the only place that seemed to be suitable was in the front garden. So I went to Woolworths down in Murray Street, which used to sell seedlings, and I bought a couple of packets of, I think they were cabbages wrapped up in newspaper, I think. I thought, well, these cabbages, I'll put these cabbages in. So I put them, planted them all along the front fence, and one day, my dad came to visit and he said, "Carmel, what have you got growing there?" And I said, "Oh, they're cabbages." And I said, "They don't seem to be forming hearts." And he said, "The reason they're not forming hearts is that they're beetroot plants." So that was in 1966. So that's how much I knew about gardening in 1996.
Wow, you came back. You changed.
I certainly changed.
Yes. Yeah, nothing wrong with beetroot. So in those days you could get, West Perth is in the city centre, really. There's no nursery facilities.
No.
Not even,
I don't recall there being any. There would have been nurseries around. I need to ask John Misker that. He'd have all that information at his fingertips.
Yes, he would.
But no, I can't recall there being any nurseries around there. There must have been somewhere.
And yet Woolworths was selling...
Woolworths, well, you used to go and buy them and they were wrapped up, instead of in seedling punnets, they were wrapped up in newspaper or brown paper. Sometimes they were little brown paper bags.
Right. So that's interesting.
Because we lived in West Perth, and at that stage I must have been working at Sydney Atkinson's in Perth, the other end of the terrace. So I used to catch a bus to work every day, and obviously I must have caught one from, I don't know if there was one that went actually from Adelaide Terrace up to West Perth, so I probably had to stop in the city to get another bus.
Oh, surely.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Okay, so we've jumped back a bit. So go back to the TAFE. When you were, and Bentley is when you started, did you come across John Visker during that period?
I don't remember John being there, no. I mean, he must have been, but I don't really remember him being there. I don't see... he certainly wasn't one of my lecturers. He'll probably say I'm wrong, but I don't remember him being one of my lecturers there.
Because you were part-time?
I was a part-time student. And I think when I started, I would have gone two nights a week. But by the time I did my diploma, I was going, I used to go one day a week. I think I used to go on Fridays for the full day. I don't remember John being there. Chris Oliver was head of department. Chris Cooper was also one of the lecturers. So I've got a lot of experience. That's also when I became very interested in permaculture and ended up being... So then the TAFE moved to Murdoch. So that was towards the end of my diploma, moved to Murdoch. And that's where I started teaching.
So in Perth at that time, there was only, you mentioned Edith Cowan, So did they have a horticulture course?
No, it wasn't horticulture. It was more towards a teaching degree. But it wasn't. I didn't do horticulture there.
Okay. No. Was TAFE the only place that you could get a formal qualification?
I think Midland might have been going at that stage, but I'm not
Midland
really sure.
TAFE.
Midland TAFE, yep. Might have been. But certainly Murdoch. I don't think there was anything else apart from Murdoch and Bentley when I first started.
So you taught at Murdoch TAFE, and how was it a full load of teaching?
No, I mostly worked part-time because of the family. The kids were all growing up, so it was difficult to work full-time. So I used to work part-time. So at that stage, we used to work at night-time or during the day. So you could work from anywhere from 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, which is quite difficult. But there was always security at night time to walk to your car, so that wasn't a problem.
Were there a lot of students? What was the student population
number?
We had
hundreds. We had a lot. We had hundreds.
Yeah. 800?
Not 800, but probably 300 or 400. I'm not really sure what the numbers were.
And going through first, second and third or 2 years? Gosh, a certificate and then a diploma.
I think the certificate full-time was about 2 years, and the diploma would have been another two, I think, or three, probably three for the diploma.
Okay.
I'm not sure, I don't know. Well, because I always did my study part-time, so I'm not really sure what the years were now.
Yeah. Was this the time that you became involved with the Australian Garden History Society?
No, I was working with John Liskett by that stage, and he often used to say to me, "Oh, Carmel, why don't you join the garden history? You know, you really love it." He was always on and on, and he eventually wore me down. But I didn't get involved until a couple of years before I retired. Probably I joined in the early 2000s, I would say. Yeah, I can't really. Might have been before that. But I joined, but I didn't get it. Didn't get very involved until after I retired.
So you just went to events and...
Yes, went to all the events, or as many as I could. Well, that was the problem at that stage, was getting to events, because we could work any time of the day or night. Yeah. And also, not being on the committee, I couldn't influence when the meeting was going to be or when the outings were going to be. So I thought, what's the point of joining if I can't get to all the events that are being held? But anyhow, John eventually wore me down.
But you were close to retirement.
Well, I was sort of close to retirement. I did actually join before I retired. And I retired earlier than I'd planned, because in 2008, while teaching, I tripped over some irrigation and broke my heel. And so for the next couple of years, it was a bit of a nightmare, because I had to have my heel pinned. And then I developed an ulcer on the back of my heel, and that wouldn't heal. So eventually I had to do a graft and take some skin from the back of my leg and fold it down to my heel, over my heel, and ended up with an exposed tendon. So I had to do another graft. So I had gone back before I had the graft operation, but I had to have support in the classroom, so I always had to have someone with me in the classroom. I couldn't do any show students how to prune because of the damage to my heel. I couldn't really stand very well on two legs, so I couldn't do my teach gardening activities, so I was restricted in what I could teach, but I could do any classroom teaching, still having to have someone with me as support, because I couldn't carry my books, etc., etc. So anyhow, I eventually retired, probably about 4 years before I'd actually planned to do. So then I got it. Once my heel got better, I could get back to getting involved a bit in the committee, which I love. I was very sad to leave my job because so often you hear people say they don't really like their job. Like my dad, he hated his job in the bank, but I absolutely love my job teaching horticulture. It was wonderful. And I, with the ODHS, I was on the committee and I was a secretary, probably a couple of other things as well. And some people I remember from the committee were Caroline, Ruth, Tom, Roz and Sue, and probably a few others. And of course, John Wodiska was always there. And with the AGHS, the National Management Committee, John retired in October 2013, and I was elected to replace him, in, so I started my, in 2014, and I remember distinctly at the National Conference was held at Albany on 2014, and I think that was one of my first official meetings for the AGHS. And I was on the AGHS National Management Committee until 2018, until Patsy Vincent took it over that position. Some names I remember from the committee were Ros Burge, Stuart Reid, Jess Hood, Richard Heathcote and Ruth Morgan. And Ruth Morgan had originally been lived in WA, but then she jumped ship and moved to Melbourne, and she ended up being on the National Management Committee meeting in committee in Melbourne.
Do you think she was the Victorian representative or an office bearer, some sort of part of the, you know, the NMC has got specialised offices?
Yeah, she was a specialised office, but I can't recall what.
Okie dokie.
Yeah,
all right.
But she was, and she was on that for a few years. And I think she was teaching it at a Melbourne university, but I'm not sure which one.
Who was the chairman?
It was the person before Richard Heathcote, but I can't remember who it was.
Okay, because Richard was, when I came on, Richard was the chair.
Yeah, he was there for quite a few years.
Yeah. So part of the role on National Management Committee is seeing the various branches and what they contribute and how the society works. Have you got an opinion of how valuable the society might be as to do with gardens and conservation?
I think it's instilling an interest in gardening overall, apart from the historical value. And Perth has helped, or WA has helped, by having historic gardens of exhibitions over a few years. And also the Tree Forum was another thing, I think, where WA contributed to the overall. I think getting members of each state together regularly as a formal committee just to talk about the things that are affecting gardeners and affecting gardens, and with climate change, how that's going to change, the garden history will be very much involved with that. And just making gardeners and people aware of our historic gardens, how important they are. For NWA, we've got the Government House Gardens, we've got University of WA Gardens. We've also got King's Park, which is a valuable resource, and even old gardens like Wirra Willa in Armidale, which has been let go the last 2 years, and the AGS in WA has brought the attention of that garden to the council in Armidale, and I think that's important that the AGS could do those things to be aware of what's happening with the historic gardens and make sure that the council is aware of it, and also their responsibility to make sure they're looked after.
And also the Heritage Council, so contributing to reporting and documenting and making ourselves available for comments to do with any landscape issues is a
I think it's valuable. To make them aware, and also our members, if they are aware of things that might need attention, to make others aware of them so they don't fall into decay and disappear.
So it's a bit education wise, isn't it?
It's
bringing forth that information where it wasn't known before.
Well, people who are like-minded can actually discuss these things and make sure something happens about them if it's necessary before they disappear.
Good points. Is there anything else that you think is important to recall regarding the Garden History Society?
I don't think so. I think that's probably about it. I'll probably think of a thousand things as soon as I finish.
That's okay. Were you involved with the Albany Conference?
I was involved with the Albany Conference and
as a committee member?
Yeah, as a committee member. And the only thing that was really bad the last day we went on our trip to Cozenup, it poured with rain. And we were meant to go to look out at Mount Barker. We went to look out at Mount Barker, but all we could see were clouds and very, very heavy rain. It was very cold. And also I remember about that is that I ended up very wet on the last day when we went to Cozenup, very wet and cold, and I ended up with the flu and coughed and spluttered all the way home in the plane from Albany. The person next door probably thought, though, I must have had some terrible thing, and ended up with pneumonia. Even though I had all my injections, I was very sick. That's what I remember about Albany.
Oh, that's a terrible memory.
So I hope the next one in Bunbury, I don't have the same memories.
Don't get on the committee. That'll wear you down. Okay, that's very good. Well, thanks, Carmel. Thank you very much.
Okay.